Hi, I'm Ritika Kocher, or Dilli Ki Diva, an urban woman recording her learnings about culture, mythology, spirituality, social changes, and ecology as I travel through India and other countries.
Who's that knocking? Don't stand outside there. Come on in here.
It's the 24th of June, 2020, and even though we're in lockdown, it's been a beautiful day today. It's been raining, and all the flowers on my roof are in complete bloom. So because I associate flowers with the goddess, I thought I'd work this out into a quiz where we ask, which goddess are you? I've been doing a lot of reading on the goddess because I've been writing a book. It's a fantasy novel called The Weapons of Kalki, and the book one is called The Book of Love. While it's called The Weapon of Kalki, Kalki is just the narrator. It's a book about the goddess. There's a part in it which I absolutely adore, where I talk about the goddess, where the goddess talks about herself. And I call that chapter The Dance of Love. And it starts with the line saying, "The divine is the sea. All religions are rivers leading to the sea. Some rivers wind a great deal. Why not go to the sea directly?" And this quote is by Mirabai. So I believe, and there are people who believe like me, that the supreme intelligence or the sacred energy or God, whatever you want to call it, whether it's Srishti, whether it's the universe itself, whether it's spirit, all these can be called by a woman's name. They are Adi Parashakti or the Param Brahman or the goddess, if you want to call her that, or Mother Nature or Jiya or Mother Earth or Lakshmi or Sri Devi. Equally, you can call her Lajja Gauri, Kali, Chandi Devi. Basically, she's the one who created the creator, the preserver, and the destroyer. She's the one from which everything else emanates. She's the creator. And from her came all the other goddesses. And for me, it's very interesting when you read this version of the Vedas that she says that from her came all the seeds. So she created the seed that divided into a Purush and Prakriti, or the giver and the receiver, the forceful and the yielding. The first seed gave birth to Kali and Krishna. Kali was the untamed energy of the universe, who then converted herself to Lalita Tripursundari, or the mother, who is creative and playful. And Lalita Tripursundari gave birth to two bubbles. From one arose Vishnu, or consciousness, and from his navel rose Brahma, or the creator, and Gauri, who incarnated as Sati and then Parvati. And from the second bubble, from Lalita Tripursundari, arose Shiva and Radha. We know that Shiva is considered outside civilization, but Radha equally is considered moksha, or the one who is so devoted to the divine that she's ready to let go of all other attractions and passions in her devotion to the divine. So Radha then expanded herself to Lakshmi, Saraswati and Ganga. And I find this interesting again because we don't think of Ganga as a goddess the way we think of Lakshmi and Saraswati. So all of them, despite being forms of the goddess, all have different roops and different versions of the goddess. So if Kali is the dark goddess of time, change and destruction, and she's the purest form of Shakti and energy, then Lalita is the playful, creative, loving aspect of her. Radha is the earthy, natural manifestation, but is equally capable of destroying evil. And in many versions, it's believed that Krishna worships Radha as much as he worships Kali. Chandika, of course, is the goddess of justice. And it's Lalita who also was created to annihilate Bandhasura, the epitome of ignorance and impotence. So she is the one who's supposed to have fought him, and as well as his children, Hirankashu, Hiranyakasapa and Ravana. Radha, of course, is worshipped and loved by Krishna. But as I said, just as much as Shiva is outside civilization, so is Krishna. So when he chooses to remain within civilization, he has to leave Radha behind. And of course, each of the goddesses is then taken as the Shakti or the power of each of the gods. So Mahasaraswati becomes the Shakti of Lord Brahma and the goddess of wisdom, creation and learning. Equally, Mahalakshmi is the goddess of the material world and its preserver. And she is the Shakti of Lord Narayana or Lord Vishnu and the bestower of all wealth and pleasure. And of course, we know Parvati, Sati and then Parvati become the Shaktis of Lord Shiva. They are the power, they are the if he is, they are action to his ability. Let's put it that way. Now comes the question of which goddess are you? So I found this extremely interesting quiz in a book which I absolutely adore, which is called Awakening Shakti by Sally Kempton. And if one of the goddesses met a mugger on the street, how would she handle it? So if you would like to put yourself in the place of one of the goddesses, see which power would you invoke? So for example, if you would like to command him to leave, and he would, you'd be Lalita Tripurasundari. If you'd like to point out that you have nothing worth stealing, then lay a curse on him. Then you'd be Dhumvati, which is another version of Lakshmi, the opposite of Lakshmi. One who lives with failure and imbibes it and becomes more by letting go of the past. If you pull a knife and lead him bleeding on the street, congratulations, you are definitely Kali. If you'd give him a karate kick and make him run away, then you're the warrior goddess Durga. If you give him all your money, then call the cops and have him busted, then you're probably the vision of Sita. If you'd give him all your money, then charm him into giving it back, then you'd be Lakshmi, not surprisingly. If you can make yourself disappear, then you'd be Chinnamasta, which is another version of Parvati and is extremely interesting. She's the goddess who would cut off her own head to feed her devotees. If you'd explain rationally why he should let you go, then analyze how you could have let this happen to you, then you're definitely Saraswati, the one who's always thinking and creative. If you could repeat powerful mantras that would stop him cold, then you're Parvati, the goddess of meditation. And if you'd look at him with complete disbelief, melting him with your smile and then walk away, then you're Radha, the goddess who's outside time. But as I started by saying, we are talking about flowers and which flowers you can use to manifest these goddesses. So if you're goddess Lakshmi and are known to bring abundance and good fortune, then the favorite flowers would be lotus or white colored fragrant flowers like tuberose or mogra or white chrysanthemum. If you're goddess Saraswati, who is always clad in white as she signifies the purity of mind and soul, then your favorite flower would be yellow in color. So either Indian magnolia or champa or the flame of the forest or yellow palash is considered very auspicious while worshipping goddess Saraswati. Equally, the yellow version of any popular flower like sunflower, rose, alamanda can be offered to Saraswati Devi. If you're Devi Durga, or the most widely worshipped form of Devi and the goddess of valor, bravery and war, then you'd favor the color red. The flowers that are said to be dearest to Devi Durga are red hibiscus, red karnar, lotus or any red flower. Equally, the flowers of Aparajita or the Shankh Pushp or Gokarna are also very dear to Devi Durga. Flower is actually named after one of the names of the goddess, Aparajita, which means the one no one can defeat. Aparajita flowers come in four colors of white, lilac, light blue and royal blue. But the most commonly used ones for goddess worship are the royal blue ones. Equally, another flower which is very dear to Devi Durga is Kadamba. She's known as the Kadamba Nivasini or the one who lives in the forest of Kadamba trees. Devi Parvati is the benevolent form of the Durga Devi and she blesses the devotee with good health, strength and a happy married life since her marriage to Lord Shiva is the ideal marriage. She also favors red flowers, especially lotus and hibiscus. She also favors other flowers like champa, bela, mogra, or palash. Kali, the other form of Durga, who is worshipped for being the warrior goddess, is also worshipped with the hibiscus because it's supposed to represent her tongue. Of course, Ganesha also loves these flowers as petals has a unique ability to emit divine consciousness. But the hibiscus is also known as a medicinal plant. It has incredible amounts of medicinal use. The Egyptians used the hibiscus tea to lower body temperature, treat heart and nerve diseases, and also to increase urine production. In Africa, the tea is used to treat constipation, cancer, liver disease, and cold symptoms. You'd have the hibiscus tea for a healthy heart. And in India, you'd also use the hibiscus to prepare a hair oil for strengthening and darkening of hair. Equally, flowers of dark roses, crimson glory, and neboli are used to worship goddess Kali. Which leaves just a little mention that you'd also use the flowers for goddess Lakshmi that you'd use for Lord Vishnu, which means that the yellow or gold orange marigold flowers are also used to worship her. So that's a little thing for you to decide on which goddess you are. But whichever goddess you are, feel free to be connected to the goddess, to be connected to sustainability, to be connected to the goodness of nature. Because in this time of lockdown, that goodness is what has kept all of us going. Thank you very much. And lovely talking to you about this beautiful topic, which I absolutely adore, of which goddess are you?
Who's there knocking at my door?
As I said, the two books I have quoted from today is my book, The Weapons of Kalki by Ritika Kocher, and Awakening Shakti by Sally Kempton.